Well, we're starting a little mini series, which is Psalms to Handle Big Emotions. And there's some big emotions in that psalm, if you didn't pick up on it. And can I just say, reading the last verse in particular of that psalm is difficult to read. I don't want to read it. It's not words that I agree with or feel like I want to suggest are words that God necessarily agrees with. But there they are. And they're in this psalm. And as we think about big emotions, we're going to have a look at that. Now, just as a way of understanding where we're moving through, what we're doing is we're moving through this. I'm going to use the terms emotions and feelings a little bit interchangeably. Emotions and feelings are different. In particular, feelings are often a part of emotions, but they're certainly not all of what is involved with emotions. And emotions, depending what you read, some people believe that emotions very much are something that begins often in our body, or we have an understanding of our emotions through our body. The interesting thing is that feelings, you know, if you're feeling sick, you've got a virus, you might say, I don't feel well. Well, that's actually not an emotion. So sometimes we can have feelings that aren't connected to emotions necessarily. But I'm going to use them a little bit interchangeably and hopefully you'll at least understand what I'm saying, what I'm coming from. But there's two emotions that we're looking at this morning, and I noticed in the flight plan it's just got sermon, grief. And I didn't know whether it was like, you know, Dave, sermon, grief. It is actually on the topic of grief. It's not good grief, he's doing a sermon again. Though it may be that was a part of it, but it's the definition of grief or loss. Sorry, grief or lament. This is a psalm of lament, of sadness. By definition, is intense sorrow or loss. And the idea of grief, really, with intense sorrow, is usually connected, not always, but usually connected at the loss of another human life, somebody that we love, who has gone. And so a lament or grief is in particular usually associated with that, but not always. And as we come to Psalm 137, it's not actually on the first time we look at it necessarily to do with loss of a loved one, but we'll find out that maybe it has got a bit to do with that. But verse 1, let's have a look at verse 1. By the rivers of Babylon we sat and wept when we remembered Zion. It sort of starts by immersing us straight away into some of the prevailing emotions and feelings for the writer at the time, doesn't it? There's an intensity there. There is sorrow, a deep sorrow. There is significant loss that is then highlighted as he goes on from verse 1. I do want to note that there is anger as well. Over the next 2 weeks, we're also going to be looking at anger and injustice. Those two things are usually quite connected. And we're also going to be looking at anxiety and worry as we go through some two other psalms. But although there's anger in this psalm, we're going to be focusing more on the grief and loss, but it's hard to actually pull them apart. Now, the church, that is the Western church in particular, has not always been good at understanding the place of emotions. They can be hard to embrace emotions sometimes, can't they? Because there's pain often associated with hard emotions. The Reformed Church in particular has been quite good at dealing with emotions very badly. And so there's one guy who was an English reformer by the name of John Bradford who said this about emotions and feelings. He says, faith must first go before and then feelings will follow. Being a reformer, he, if I could sort of translate where he was coming from a little bit, I believe, is that our Bible knowledge is going to shape our feelings and our emotions. That must be what dictates what we feel and the emotions that we have as we respond to the world around us. That Bible knowledge will shape that. And so, therefore, we must have a faith, which for him, I believe, means very much an intellectual understanding of what God has done and what he can do. Now, I would say that my theology, my faith, my understanding of reading Scripture does shape my emotions and feelings, but it doesn't all the time. And it won't all the time. And I don't believe God actually expects that to be the case. Indeed, sometimes faith and what I read in the Bible actually intensifies feelings and emotions for me in negative ways as well as in positive ways at times. And so we can't just assume that reading the Bible, especially maybe passages that are sort of upbeat ones, are going to make us feel better when we're sad. Maybe it won't. A more modern day writer, but of the evangelical persuasion, Joe Thorne, says this: neither stoicism nor emotionalism are marks of healthy faith. What is needed is robust biblical theology that informs and transforms our emotions. So this gentleman is actually suggesting that you can theologize, and I think in some ways he means rationalize our emotions so that they can be then transformed to be more palatable, more what we might like them to be or think God might like them to be. And so he says, don't fall into the two traps. The traps of ignoring stoicism, just ignoring your feelings and your emotions. Don't fall into that trap, but don't fall into the trap of letting them run your life. Instead, rationalize or theologize them. I want to suggest that there is another way forward, which God would have us do with regards to our emotions and feelings. That is, when we think about our feelings and our faith, the feelings need to be acknowledged and they need to be processed. Not ignored, not rationalized, or for that matter allowed to rule us, but they do need to be acknowledged. They're a reality in and of themselves, often pointing to a reality. And so they need to be acknowledged and processed to be understood and to understand what they mean to us. Now, the interesting thing is this is very hard for us to do. And I don't know if you've noticed this, whether in yourself or whether with somebody else, for example, in your life. But you notice when somebody's feeling intense feelings and emotions, it might be you, it might be because of a death of somebody you love, or it might be some other large loss in your life or somebody near you. And it's really tempting to avoid the pain that those emotions bring up. In fact, the pain is just the reality of a loss. The emotions is us feeling that pain in some ways. But what is often tempting to do is in the short term to try and ignore the pain, which often means ignoring the reality of what it is that we are grieving. We also do that with other people. Sometimes when there's people around us who are suffering and going through something really heavy, we can be very tempted to encourage them to avoid it or to move on. As one person I was talking to this morning said, it can be very tempting to change the topic, change the subject. So when somebody is in particular pain, we'll often say things like, well, thank goodness that God is bigger than that, which is true, and yet it sort of doesn't allow the person to sit in the emotion they are. It moves them from that. Sometimes we say things like, oh, well, at least it's over. But if the emotions are still there and are still raw, it's not over. We can say all sorts of little things that are trying to encourage or move somebody on, but it's not necessarily going to be helpful. You see, our feelings are our feelings, and they point us to some reality. They shouldn't be avoided. In fact, they can't be avoided. We may ignore them and feel that we've avoided them, but they don't just vaporize and disappear. They do, in some way or another, impact us. And for long-term fruit, it's helpful to face them. So I've been reading a book by Peter Scazzero, which is Emotionally Healthy Discipleship, where his aim is to help disciples of Jesus be transformed and changed deeply. And he has a whole chapter on grief and loss and the good things that come out of grief and loss. And in doing that, he's not saying, oh, don't worry about grief and loss, there's just good things. He's actually saying good things come through the pain of grief and loss. One of the things that he says about these things as emotions, he says, losses that are not grieved accumulate in our soul like heavy stones that weigh us down. And when we fail to attend to them, they prevent us from living freely and honestly with God and others. His claim, and I think he's right, is that these things, when they're not processed, they're still there, they're weights. The way that we in some ways are freed from them or grow through them is to process them properly. So let's for a moment come back to Psalm 137. We're just going to sit in that for a bit. It says, by the rivers of Babylon, this is the first three verses, we sat and wept when we remembered Zion. And there on the poplars we hung our harps, for there our captors asked us for songs. Our tormentors demanded songs of joy. Now, just for a moment, are there emotions or feelings there that you recognize or can point to? Now, the interesting thing is that I said that emotions, they often talk about some sort of physical basis for emotions within us. Sometimes it's the tightness in our stomach or the tightness in our chest. It's a physical tiredness sometimes. There's all sorts of things where there's a sort of a physical connection with emotions. What's the first thing that you can see there in Psalm 137 that indicates something to do with the people who are there on the rivers of Babylon that is physical? What's the first thing? You got it in front of you? By the rivers of Babylon. It's an interaction question. What's the first sort of physical thing that's happening for them? What's the first thing we're told about them physically? Sorry, I can't hear you. They wept. That's the second thing. What's the first thing? They sat. So if we're not in touch and in tune with what's happening with emotions, we might go, oh yeah, they'd probably walked a long way and they just decided to sit down. Who wants to stand by the river? Sitting by the river is cool. Why have they told us? Maybe they've reached a point of physical and emotional exhaustion, and to stand is too much. They sit. Sometimes you talk about sitting in sorrow. It's one of the things that we often physically do. If you've had one of those days where somebody has passed away and somebody you love, and you go to a funeral and you can stand and talk for a while, but then there comes a point where you sit because you've just had enough. There's actually a physical posture, and this isn't something that says some of them sat, some of them lay down, some of them were standing up, some of them were running around. They just all sat. The second one, as was rightly pointed out, is they wept. There's this outpouring. There's this physical thing that happens. There's this moisture that happens in the eyes. What else is there? There's an interesting statement. There on the poplars we hung our harps. Some of these guys are musicians. And they're musicians who do what? They give up. They give up their music. It's not a saying that I'm familiar with as a musician. I'm going to hang up my harp. But they did. They'd had enough. And then there's this mention of their captors. And this is where injustice and anger maybe comes in as well. But there is this tormenting and even a bullying that's going on, isn't there? These people who have removed them from their homes have said, hey, sing us a happy song. Possibly because they've seen how much pain these people are in and they want to torment them further. And so they sit in it. It would have been inappropriate at this time, wouldn't it, to have said to them, it's okay. To encourage them to theologize it or rationalize it. God has made a promise that you'll be in the promised land again. Right now, they're not. You could say, come on, guys. People of God, we're glass half full, not glass half empty. But they're in a place where they don't want to be. And that's the truth. And so they need a moment to sit there. And they need somebody to come alongside them, perhaps, and say, yeah, this is big. This hurts. This is an injustice. This is not how it should be. This must be painful. And to sit with them in it. Peter Scazzero goes on to say this about loss. He says, however it comes, loss is loss. No one escapes suffering and pain in this life. What may feel like an insignificant loss for you could feel like a catastrophic loss for me. And that's because God has made each of us unique. And so it's not up to me at this point to look at them and say, guys, get over it. If it was me, I'd be over this by now. It's not appropriate. It's, guys, this looks like it's significant for you. A psalm that is a long way from where they want to be. Now, psalms are songs, aren't they? Yes, Dave. Psalms are songs. And this one in particular, as a lot of other psalms are, is a means of processing emotions. Did you notice that? Now, who would have thought it that you'd use a song to process emotions? Has anybody ever heard of that happening before? Using a song to process emotions? Maybe songs about like, oh, there was this girl and I really like her. I have strong emotions. I'll put it in a song. Or I knew a girl, I really like her. But then I heard on the grapevine, gee, that could be a good song, that she doesn't like me anymore. That's strong emotions. I'll put it in a song. I'll process it. Songs are actually historically used, aren't they, to process emotions or to express feelings. And that's what's happening here with this psalmist. And then it gets into verses 8 and 9. And it gets really dark for a moment. Did you notice? Happy is he who repays you for what you have done to us. He who seizes your infants and dashes them against the rocks. Now, just for a moment, I want to ask you, do you think, so this is the psalmist saying, something horrible has been done to me and my people. And we're going to, the person who revenges us through an equally horrible act as to what has happened to us is going to be happy. Do you think that's good theology? Do you think that is really the helpful message at this point? What do you think Jesus, just WWJD for a moment, what would Jesus do? Do you think Jesus would say, when somebody dashes, when somebody takes you from your home, then the thing that you should do is encourage somebody to kill their children? It's not, is it? This, in this moment, isn't necessarily good theology. It's not. There's probably a couple of things to note. One, this is how they feel. This is how they feel. And there's actually a reason, and we're sort of sneaking into the area of injustice and anger for a moment, but just while we think of emotions and feelings, why do they feel this way, do you think? I'm going to hazard a guess, even though it's not clear in the psalm. Have a look. O daughter of Babylon, doomed to destruction, happy is he who repays you for what you have done. My guess is that there's been some Israelite children who have been killed, have been dashed against the rocks. That was a part of what happened when they were overtaken and as adults were removed, that there were children who were never able to come with them. And so in this moment, as they weep at the side of Babylon, on the rivers of Babylon, there is this reality that is before them. And this would surely make you sit down, wouldn't it? The reality that your children are not with you because they've been slaughtered. How do you come to the other side of that? How do you process that emotion? How do you grieve that? You know how they talk about grief being a process, and one of the first things is denial, that you'd actually deny that somebody has died or that there's been a loss. And as you go through the processes of grief, you come to anger, where you just want somebody to pay for what has happened. It's not good theology. It's not necessarily what Jesus would do, but it's a part of what happens in here, isn't it? And so in Psalm 137, that's what we see. It's a particularly dark psalm, and a particularly person in a particularly dark place. as somebody endeavors to process the reality. Now, if you were to look at Wikipedia, it's really interesting on this passage. And you can Google this passage and look up all sorts of opinions. But it says, after the Second Vatican Council, the last three verses of this psalm were removed from Catholic liturgical books because of their cruelty perceived to be incompatible with the gospel message. They are incompatible with the gospel message. It's another question as to whether they should just be removed or not, or whether we should sit with God's people in those verses and have a moment with them, which is interesting because this is a further quote from Wikipedia about this psalm. It says, the psalm has been set to music by many composers. Many settings omit the last verse. The hymn writer John L. Bell comments alongside his own setting of this psalm, and he uses a word that I think he made up. The final verse is omitted in this metricization, because its seemingly outrageous curse is better dealt with in preaching or group conversation. It should not be forgotten, however. So he's just gone, I don't think we should sing this in a song in church. But please note, he doesn't just remove it. What does he say? He says it should not be forgotten, especially by those who have never known exile, dispossession, or the rape of people and land. He says there's a reality here that needs to be sat with for a moment. We're not necessarily going to sing it in a hymn. That may not be appropriate, but we shouldn't ignore this. Verses 8 and 9 and all of Psalm 137 is a part of processing human atrocity. A part of that is the injustice, and a part of it is this process of grief. Now, that's all a bit of a bummer, isn't it? I've encouraged you to not avoid something that is painful at times. I encourage you to sit with it, even though it might hurt. And I guess it might be helpful if I point to the reality that there are good things that can come through this. It is important to remember, isn't it, that Psalm 137, and this is not for the point of just being able to say, let's ignore 137 because it's no longer relevant. There is relevance in it. But Psalm 137 is not where everything ends, is it? It isn't. There's actually new life that comes out of all of this for Israel, even though they needed to sit in this pain for a time. And so let's just for a moment, there's three things that Peter Scazzero points to with regards to grief and loss and how there actually can be good things that come through those. He says, first of all, that how to attend to grief and loss. First of all, pay attention to pain. It helps to lament. You need to feel the feels, if you like. One of the ways of doing that can be helpful to be just aware of our bodies, like I said before, how we're feeling in our chest or in our stomach or in other ways. So pay attention to the pain. Don't avoid it. Don't ignore it. Attend to it. But secondly, to wait in the confusion that often grief and loss bring. And so with Psalm 137, I think that verses 8 and 9 are a part of the confusion which we sit in sometimes as we grieve. And that's going to take time, so we need to allow time for that. Wait in the confusing in between and make sure that we allow adequate time for that. We don't just from one day to the next change from having a massive loss to going on as though nothing has happened. And thirdly, and this is where the good stuff is, we need to allow the old to birth the new. One of the things about grief and loss is that we are acknowledging the fact that something is no more. But whenever something is no more, something fills its place. And while we're waiting to see what that is, that's the confusing in-between time. But while we're waiting, that can be hard to see or understand. But it can also be helpful just to know that there is something that is going to replace what is lost. And the way God is that sometimes He works in good ways in this. And so there's a bunch of things that He's got. And if you I'd encourage you to read the book, but it goes beyond our scope to go into any detail with these things. But he does highlight some of these things, that when we attend to the emotions and the feelings of grief and loss, that God reveals himself to us. And now one of the ways he does that is he's the God of grief and loss. Jesus went through pain, and as we're going to look at injustice and anger as well, Jesus went through injustice and anger, but he also went through loss, didn't he? It's really interesting, isn't it, that Jesus has a good friend, Lazarus, who dies, and he's at the tomb of Lazarus, and he knows that he's going to raise Lazarus from the dead shortly. He knows, and yet he still cries, he still weeps, he still sits in that moment for a time. And we have the opportunity as we sit in grief and loss to learn more about the God that we follow. The other thing is that God makes us softer and more compassionate as we work through grief and loss. God gives a greater revelation of ourselves. We come to a place where we're able to understand ourselves and who we are. And God makes us more of our true self in Christ. And finally, God makes us more truly alive. As I said, don't have time to go through those particularly this morning. And I encourage you to read Peter Scazzaro's book, Emotionally Healthy Discipleship, where he goes through that in greater detail. But with God making us more truly alive, there's this reality that if we don't process or attend to our emotions and our feelings, instead we shut them down in some way, which is the Western traditional way of doing it, then we're actually not living life to the full. There's a part of us that we are avoiding, ignoring, putting to one side. To live life is to actually, with the good things, the ups and the downs, is embracing fully, because that is life. So people who do not process or acknowledge emotions and feelings at some level are not living life to the full. So where to from here? Well, there's a couple of things, just practical things I want to encourage us with, I guess, as we finish up. The first is it's really important then to talk. That's what Psalm 137 is. That's somebody in the pain of grief and loss talking. And sometimes we're not going to make a whole lot of sense. Sometimes we're not going to sound particularly fair or nice in the middle of it, and that's verses 8 and 9 of Psalm 137, isn't it? But it's important to find somebody who will sit with you and listen. Sometimes that'll be journaling, and that will be God that will be listening. But gee, it helps if we can find a person who'll sit and listen as we sit in that space. And so it's about talking, but it's also about listening, about being a church community, for example, where somebody can come to us and talk about their grief and their pain and not have somebody change the subject on them or become so anxious about it that they try and minimize what the person's going through. Being a community that helps each other sit in those emotions, to be able to sit and to say things like, that sounds big, that sounds hard, and have faith and trust that with some time, they will come to the other side of what they're going through. And so allowing time, and then also going back to some of Scazzaro's points, seeing what God does in that as you walk with somebody else, either in your own grief or with them in theirs. I've got two little things down the bottom as well to finish up. It's an important thing, I guess this is that confusing middle time, but the question that I find often helps is, what does God want for me in this season now? Ecclesiastes reminds us that there is a season for everything, and grief is actually a part of that in Ecclesiastes 3. But there's that opportunity, isn't there, to see why it is that God has you in a particular season. And sometimes, especially in the confusing point, you may not have an answer from God about that. But it can be helpful to be waiting expectantly so that you hear the answer when it does come. And finally, and this is where I want to land, I guess, is there's this prayer that you can pray. Now, you may not need to pray it. I needed to pray it because, I guess, a little bit to do with my family that I grew up with and one thing or another. But for me and the family I grew up with, we didn't do feelings. We didn't do emotions. The best place for emotions and feelings was to sort of put them in a bag and tightly tie the top and put it back there somewhere and avoid them and ignore them. And so what that meant was a couple of things. One, that then became my default of how I dealt with emotions and feelings. They were just automatically put in the bag. But the other thing too was that I lost the ability, I guess, to feel things that were happening in my life. And I needed to relearn that. And one of the things that helped me with that, I believe, was asking God to help me learn how to feel feelings again, how to engage with emotions again. Now, that may not be you. We're a number of people here from different cultural backgrounds. We're all from different families of origin. And so that may not be what it is for you. One of the things as well for me in relearning how to feel was I then had to learn how to maturely respond to emotions and feelings that I was not practiced. You know, two-year-olds have trouble regulating, monitoring, coping with big feelings, and they learn as they grow, hopefully. Well, when you shut things down and then go for 20 years without dealing with big emotions or feelings because you just avoid them, you've got to actually learn all that. And you might even have a tantrum or two as you embrace feelings for the first time again. So there's all that as well. So I just want to encourage you, wherever you are in that journey, it might be asking God to help you feel your emotions. It may be asking God to help you process them. But also, I guess, how it is that we help each other in that on that journey as well. There's probably a lot in that. And you might want to have a chat to me at morning tea. And you'd be welcome to do that. If you've got any questions or comments, I'd love to hear them. And especially as we enter in the next couple of weeks with a couple more psalms on topics similar to this as well. I'd love to give us a moment to pray. Also, just recognize that for some of us, this might have been a hard talk to listen to, just in the sense that you may have a sense within yourself that there's some pain with regards to grief and loss or injustice and anger or whatever it might be. So I'd love to pray for you as well. Let's pray. Yeah, Heavenly Father, we thank you that we are fearfully and wonderfully made and that you have made us as emotional beings, beings that feel often strongly and intensely. This is a part of us being beings that love, beings that do relationship, which brings in dynamics such as hurt and injustice, as well as love, as things like forgiveness and grace and acceptance. All those things are sort of connected in. Pray, Lord, that you would help us as a church community to be able to encourage each other well with whatever it is that we might go through at times. Also pray, Lord, that you would help us to grow in our own self-awareness. That you'd help us to feel the things that we feel, to know what it is that we're feeling, to be able to process. And we also just thank you that you are the God of new life and redemption, the God who isn't just a God of crucifixion, but a God of resurrection. And that even at the level of feelings and emotions, that you are working in us and transforming us and changing us. And we thank you for this time now and for each other. In Jesus' name.